Well, Maestro Rubart, happy anniversary. Congratulations on 20 years here.
Thank you, Sandra. Thank you so much.
When you came to Pensacola, did you expect, when you came in 1996, did you think you'd be here for 20 years?
No. I have to be perfectly honest about that, that 20 years ago when Hetty and I arrived here, we were thrilled to be at the beach. We were thrilled for the position that we had, and our life just seemed full of uncertainty. And Pensacola seems a very different place then than it is now. And if I had known where the Pensacola Symphony was going to go, I would have just been ecstatic. But at that time, everything seemed quite uncertain, and I would have thought my chances of staying for the long term were not so good.
When you think about your past two decades, and there's a lot to consider here, but what comes to mind first?
I think probably two things that have happened. One is that, and I'm very grateful for this, is that I've evolved a lot myself as a music director. My understanding of the role that an orchestra plays in a community is completely different now than it was 20 years ago. And I'm so grateful to all of the mentors that I've had here in Pensacola within the community that have sort of helped me to evolve the symphony in that way. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is that I think most every aspect of the organization has slowly and steadily grown in its professionalism. And so in terms of the quality of the performances that we do, the way in which we interact with the community, the facilities that we use, the quality of the players that come, the guest artists, everything about it has just steadily evolved to become really a powerhouse regional orchestra, which is a very exciting place to be.
Well, and you've performed with many wonderful musicians over the years here on your staff.
We have. We draw musicians from all over the South, really. We have players coming in from Jacksonville, from Atlanta, from New Orleans, from Baton Rouge, from Charlotte sometimes, Tampa, places like that. And the quality of the players has just skyrocketed, and it's really a very formidable orchestra at this point, which is exciting. And then we've also had a wonderful string of guest artists that have come through, and we have a good reputation. Artists like to come here. Their managers like them to come here because they know that they'll have a wonderful audience and that they'll be treated well and have a good musical experience.
Now, given your 20 years here, there are a lot of highlights, and we're going to touch on a few more of them. But when you first arrived in 1996, I had just gotten the job here at WUWF, and you were one of my first interviews.
I remember that.
One of the issues that we talked about was the graying, the graying of classical music. Give us a status check today, and let's use that as a launching point to discuss some of the many things that you've done as leader of the orchestra to reach out to the community.
So first, the status check. I think 20 years ago, what I probably said was the symphony audience has always been a pretty gray audience, and it's, in fact, not any grayer now than it was then. So we can talk about the grayness, but not so much the graying, because it always has been that way, that it's an acquired taste. It's something that at a certain time in people's lives, they have the time, the attention span, the financial resources, they just reach a place where that becomes an attractive art form to get involved with. I think people have been talking about the graying of the symphony audience literally for about a century. I mean, literally. You can find news reports back 60, 75, 80 years ago of the exact same conversation. So, in fact, that hasn't changed. But there is something that has changed that's of a concern, which is that the pipeline which feeds to our gray audience has been somewhat disrupted. The decline in music education around the country, the prevalence of digital media, which is wonderful in many ways, but is definitely a game changer in many ways. The fact that we used to count on parents to expose their kids, their family, to classical music, and some of those kids, when they grew up, would be appreciators of classical music. Now, the parents themselves perhaps have not been so exposed. And so the pipeline that leads to that gray audience is a bit of a cause for concern. And orchestras all over the country, including the Pensacola Symphony, have taken some very proactive steps around that. We've recently launched a program that we invested considerable resources in researching this. We call it Beyond the Stage, and we look at ways in which the Pensacola Symphony can nurture the appreciation of classical music throughout the community and not on the Sanger stage on Saturday night. That's not what this program is about. So, of course, we've always done a lot of music education, and we still do a lot of music education. We bring fifth graders into the hall. We have family concerts. We send ensembles out into the schools. But we're doing some new things now. We have partnerships with some schools where we send some of our musicians out not just once or twice, but maybe six or eight times per semester, over and over, to really build meaningful relationships. And those are the kinds of things where we have gotten younger students really very definitely engaged in a deeper way that will, in turn, that will lead them to become the audience in the future. And it's okay if they're gray. I just want them to be there.
That sounds great. So your music education, you've taken the show on the road.
We have, in a few different ways. We've taken it out of the Sanger here in the Pensacola community, but more than just music education. Our Beyond the Stage program, we take ensembles into places like Nemours Children's Hospital or hospice or some of the retirement communities, places like that. We have very active, regular engagements in some places that you wouldn't normally expect us to be having musicians. But then we've also taken the entire orchestra out on the road some. We've been going down to Seaside a few times lately, which is always a lot of fun and good exposure, not just for us, but the whole Pensacola community.
Let's talk about the renovation at the Sanger Theater.
Oh, yes.
How big was that?
Yes. That's the seminal event of the last 20 years, the renovation of the theater. It's something that I remember my very first board meeting raising the question the Sanger Theater is very special. It's really wonderful. It's a treasure. And it's a really hard place to work. It's not working. You know, and there were so many things about it. It was functioning in a way it was never designed to do. It was a multi-purpose community arts facility. It had been designed to be a simple vaudeville house. And it wasn't in good repair. The acoustical properties were worse than bad. It was just very difficult. We all loved it, but it was difficult. And it was probably a good 8, 9, 10 years before it all gelled. And there's a lot of talk. There were a lot of false starts and then more talk and then back burner this and that. And then all of a sudden it gelled. It largely gelled because Bill Greenhut got involved and he steered it through a complicated process that very few people, I think, could have done. But I also think that the community as a whole had evolved to the point where they recognized the value of making that theater truly fulfill its potential. So from that time on, we had our acoustics, we had our storage, we had comfortable seats for the audience, we had we started drawing a completely different kind of player and guest artist, just like the theater itself has drawn different, much higher level of entertainment across the board. It's really been the anchor of downtown Pensacola, and certainly for the symphony, night and day difference once we got that done.
Well, now, over 20 years, you've had countless concerts, performances. Mm-hmm. Are there any that rise to the top? I mean, I know that's a large question, but are there some that are most memorable for you?
There's a lot, and there's a lot for different reasons. I will call attention to one concert that I think will always be among the most meaningful musical experiences I've ever had, which was a concert that took place 2.5 weeks after Hurricane Ivan. And And we were scheduled to open the season in the Sanger Theater with a program of a Liszt piano concerto and a Rachmaninoff symphony, or, you know, sort of the standard kind of razzle-dazzle stuff that we do on opening nights. The Sanger was closed. It was obviously just such a tumultuous time for the community that we couldn't quite do business as usual. And yet at the same time, we were loath to cancel opening night. And so we worked – I still don't quite know how we pulled this off. But over the period of like 4 days of brainstorming, we moved the concert from the Sanger to Olive Baptist Church. We changed the program to do Beethoven Ninth Symphony instead. Somehow Kyle Marrero managed to wrangle a chorus together in the aftermath of a hurricane. I don't know how he did that. We found some soloists, and we started rehearsing Friday evening, and Saturday afternoon put on a program of Beethoven 9 free to the community in Olive Baptist Church. And I don't know if I've ever felt that kind of connection between the message of music and the moment of that message was called for. For many people, I think it was the first time they'd gone out of their house. The place was packed. And, you know, to have that powerful message of Beethoven Ninth Symphony in the community at that particular time was it was just a tremendous gift to be part of that, and something I'll never forget.
Well, before we stop looking back, I want to ask you kind of what you're most proud of when you think about your first 20 years here and all that you have accomplished.
I think that probably what I'm most proud of is the responsiveness that we've developed within the organization. We look at ourselves a lot. We evaluate how can we really be the orchestra that Pensacola needs and deserves and will benefit from, and not just react to that, but even be proactive and say, well, what is the orchestra that Pensacola is going to want to have 5 years from now and 10 years from now, and what do we need to do to be there for that? So I think 20 years ago when we first came, and this is an evolution for me as much as for everybody else. I mean, I was all about, oh, let's play a Beethoven symphony. I love concerts. I'm much more aware now about it's not only about the concerts. It's about being integrated into all aspects of the community, the education, the performances, but also the Pops performances in the park and the just everything. And to have that multi-pronged approach of getting into the community is something that was an evolution. We didn't start there 20 years ago. I didn't start there 20 years ago. But I think that's probably what I'm most proud of now, because I think the Pensacola Symphony is an organization now that is uniquely fit to Pensacola. And that didn't happen by accident, but it's very rewarding.
Great. Let's take some time now to look ahead. This is your 20th anniversary season, and opening night is around the corner. Tell us about this first program.
A couple of really fun, splashy orchestral showcases. It's the kind of stuff that I love to do. I love the pieces that by the composers that just know how to make an orchestra sparkle. Debussy and Ravel, the two French impressionist masters. By Ravel, we'll be playing his Alborada del Gracioso, a Spanish-tinged dance piece that's very flashy, huge percussion section, playing all kinds of fun stuff. And then by Debussy, his great tone poem, Iberia, sort of a tribute to the music of Spain, a very nuanced, powerful, rich score that really brings out the best in the orchestra. So there'll be lots of fireworks, orchestral fireworks on the second half. On the first half, we have a guest artist that I'm really pleased to be bringing. Bella Hristova is her name, a violinist. I've worked with her a couple of times before. She'll be coming for the Sibelius Violin Concerto, which is just like this just incandescently intense piece. And she's just sensational. She's just a wonderful young player that just reaches out and grabs the audience. And there's some Dvorak Slavonic dances, also very popular pieces. So they're very popular, very appealing pieces on opening night with a nice starry guest artist. And it's a great way to open the season.
And it's going to be a great season throughout?
A few other highlights. We're playing Mahler's Third Symphony in March, which is just a transcendent experience, a large piece, certainly the first time it's been done in Pensacola by a lot. And so I'm very excited about that. Some other great guest artists, two Van Cliburn competition gold medalists coming this season, Alexander Kobrin for the Brahms B-flat concerto in November, and John Nakamatsu returning in January for Beethoven concerto. Just, yeah, lots of stuff. The Russian Spectacular will be back. Beethoven in Blue Jeans will be back. All of some of our favorite concerts. My wife, Hetty, is going to play the Mozart D minor concerto with us at the Mozart Festival at the church, First United Methodist Church. A lot of highlights this year.
Well, Peter Rubart, 20 years and counting. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra.